I had read and been told about missionary work from my childhood, and always held it in high esteem. And the idea, I think I might say, just simply grew upon me. I made up my mind about a month ago. It does appeal to me more than working in this country for several reasons. I might add that I haven't a shadow of a doubt that it is my vocation, and I intend to see it through. Those words were written by a young man by the name of James Edward Walsh, who in April 1912 entered the Catholic Foreign Missionary Society of America, and at the request of his superiors wrote the story of his religious vocation. He was expressing in those words, I suspect, what every missionary of the church has ever felt who has ever served in foreign mission lands. Just about a year before James Edward Walsh wrote those words, the bishops of the United States gave approval for the formation of the Catholic Foreign Mission Society of America. And no sooner had permission been given for the formation of the society than six young men from different parts of the country all converged on the town of Hawthorne, New York, and they went into an old home. And as soon as they got to the old home, when they approached the old home, what did they find? They found horses and carts and furniture being carried out of the home and being put on the carts and being transported by the horses on a 5-mile trip from Hawthorne, New York, to Ossining, New York, to a large manor home on the top of a mountain or a knoll. And the top of this knoll was going to be dedicated to our Blessed Mother, and hence we have the term Mary Knoll, the Catholic Foreign Mission Society of America, the development of Mary Knoll. Well, James Edward Walsh, many, many years later, was asked by an interviewer, were you the first student to actually enter Mary Knoll, the Catholic Foreign Mission Society? And he responded, no. Francis Ford arrived on September 14th, the feast of the finding of the True Cross. I reached Hawthorne on September 15th, the Seven Dolors of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Both of these men, Francis Ford and James Walsh, would be ordained Mary Knoll priests. Both would become bishops. Both defended the faith in China. Bishop Ford would die and be buried in China. Bishop Walsh would leave China and live very productively at Mary Knoll headquarters in Ossining, New York, for many years. Both were defenders of faith by their dry martyrdoms. And since, by Bishop Walsh's own admission, Francis Ford arrived one day earlier at Mary Knoll, it is with Francis Xavier Ford that we will begin. Francis X. Ford was born in Brooklyn, New York, in January of 1892. And among his Mary Knoll contemporaries, he was certainly acclaimed to be the most literarily productive man that Mary Knoll had gotten among its first group. He came from a very literary family. His father was Austin Ford, and Austin Ford, together with his brother Patrick Ford, in 1870 had begun the Irish World, a very famous newspaper in New York City, very passionately involved with the whole question of Irish independence, very, very much involved with the plight of the downtrodden, and very, very strong editorials always appeared in the pages of the Irish World, not only advocating the cause of Ireland, but advocating the cause of downtrodden minorities wherever they might be. The literary home in which Francis Ford was raised in Brooklyn was going to serve him very well. The editorial positions that the Irish World took as he was growing up and the things that influenced him would be certainly very, very much a former of his character as well. His mother came from the Midwest. She came from Iowa. She was also very literary, and she contributed many columns to the pages of the Irish World, and so this is the milieu in which he grew up in Brooklyn, New York. He went to St. Francis College, St. Francis Preparatory School, I should say, and Cathedral College, both in Brooklyn. And when he was a student in Cathedral College, Bishop James Anthony Walsh, now there's James A. Walsh and James E. Walsh. James Anthony Walsh, Bishop Walsh, and Father Frederick Price were the actual co-founders of Mary Hall. Well, Bishop James A. Walsh came to Cathedral College in Brooklyn when Francis Ford was a young man. He talked about the church's tremendous need for missionaries. He talked about the work in China. He talked about what a marvelous life it would be for a young man to give himself over to the foreign missions. And Francis X. Ford is sitting there in the audience in college that day, being very, very much influenced by Bishop James A. Walsh and what he was saying about Mary Hall. And he knew very well that Mary Hall was the foreign society to which he would give his life. He was ordained to the priesthood in 1917, but before ordination, he was a very prolific writer, not only in college, but also in his years in the seminary. And Bishop James A. Walsh said, "Listen, we need some kind of a Mary Hall song. We need something that's going to rouse us. I'm going to have a little competition among the seminarians to see who can write the best song." Bishop Ford composed a song, and the song that Bishop Ford composed won the contest. It was put to music, and the musical score was the melody of Maryland, My Maryland. And Maryland, My Maryland, as some of you may know, is, of course, the same musical score as the Christmas song, O Tannenbaum. And this is how the song went. To raise up sterling men for God, Mary Hall, O Mary Hall, whose blood may stain the heathen sod, Mary Hall, fair Mary Hall. This is thy aim, thy sacred call, to bring Christ's name and grace to all. God, speed them on to save men's soul, O house of God, my Mary Hall. He continues, O Mary, the apostles' queen, for Mary Hall, thy Mary Hall, throughout this country do thou glean, for Mary Hall, thy Mary Hall, vocations to the darkened east, who need the offering hand of priest, to bless them ere death sounds its toll, from Mary Hall, thy Mary Hall. Well, 1 year after his ordination in 1918, Father Ford was a member of the first group of Mary Hall missionaries to go to China. As one of his biographers noted, it was common knowledge that Bishop Ford had a Chinese heart. Even his eyes and his size blended very well. That he was very pro-Chinese in his attitude, what is today being called acculturation, was well known. All knew that his sympathies were with the underprivileged. Francis Ford spent several months with Father Price, Mary Hall's co-founder, in Yongkung and Kongmun, two provinces in southern China. And when the new missionary territory of Kaiying, also in southern China, was established, Father Ford went there in company with a few other Mary Hall priests. In 1955, the last official public act of Bishop James Anthony Walsh was to consecrate Francis Xavier Ford as the first bishop of Kaiying in southern China, and the diocese was officially raised to a vicariate in 1955. Bishop Ford opened in his diocese a very impressive seminary for the training of native Chinese clergy, and he also worked very closely with the Mary Hall sisters. And they established a plan in the mid-50s that was quite revolutionary for those days. The Mary Hall sisters would go into these little villages in China, and they would actually take up residence in Chinese family homes. They would catechize the children while they were living in the homes. They would teach the wives, the mothers, the basic rudiments of housekeeping and so forth. And they tried to create an atmosphere while they were living with the families in which Catholicism and family life would come together and would be beautifully, beautifully fostered. Then after these sisters lived with families for a while, they would return to a central mission station for rest and relaxation and the like. Usually while they were there, Bishop Ford would offer spiritual conferences to the sisters, and at least one of these conferences has been published in book form under the title Come Holy Spirit. Well, in 1946, Bishop Ford returned to the United States to attend the general chapter of Mary Hall. While he was in this country, he composed this beautiful prayer. Grant us, Lord, to be the doorstep by which the multitudes may come to worship thee. And if in the saving of their souls we are ground underfoot and spat upon and worn out, at least we shall have served thee in some small way in helping pagan souls. We shall have become the king's highway in pathless China. Well, such was very soon going to be his own fate. In October of 1949, Chiang Kai-shek and his nationalist forces were defeated by people who were thought originally to be nothing more than agrarian reformers. They were far more than that. Mao Zedong, brought the communist revolution to China in 1949 and turned China into the totalitarian state that it remains to this very day. The following April, after a public trial, Bishop Ford and his secretary, a Mary Noel sister by the name of Sister Joan Marie, were bound with ropes, placed under the escort of about 30 armed soldiers, and they were taken to the prison in Canton. Sister Joan Marie was eventually released, and she told the story of all this to Bishop Fulton J. Sheen, who at the time was the national director of the Society for the Propagation of the Faith, and this is what Bishop Sheen records in his memoirs. The bishop, that would be Ford, told Sister, "I am afraid the communists are going to take over my property. Here is the key to my chapel. I want you to take out the Blessed Sacrament before it's desecrated." She took a loaf of bread and a key to the bishop's chapel on the second floor of the home, removed the Blessed Sacrament, and hid it in a loaf of bread. As she closed the chapel door, a communist colonel, who was known all over that part of China for his cruelty, came walking up and said, "I'm taking over possession of this chapel. I have a key." He tried to open the door, but it would not open. "Here, you open the door." She said, I cannot. My hands are filled with bread." She passed the bread to him, and he looked down at it as if it were an infant, she recalled. But he had his gun cocked all the while. As she opened the door, she removed the Blessed Sacrament to safety, and later on it was imprisoned. And later on was imprisoned. As they were on their way to prison from Caying to Canton, Bishop Ford reminded Sister Joan Marie and some others that the church is not only a church triumphant, it is indeed a church suffering, and they should be prepared to suffer persecution. They were never to forget, however, that Christ was with them. As they were marching along on the way to China, on the way to Canton, rather, the communists put a label, a plaque, if you will, a card, on Bishop Ford, around his neck, and it read, "The People's Government welcomes the spy, Bishop Ford." Sister Joan Marie went on to tell Archbishop Sheen, "In prison, he was too weak to stand, so he leaned against a prison wall. His hair was long and white, and his beard matted, his face emaciated and pale from torture." As they were walking along the death march, the bishop was forced to carry a large sack on his back, and at one point the sister was watching him, and she went up to the communist captain, the same fellow who had been at the home, and she said, "Will you please look at him and try to do something?" Well, the communist captain very abruptly told the sister to get back in line. A few moments later, the sister gazed at the bishop again, and he was no longer carrying that sack on his shoulders. The communist colonel had taken the sack off the shoulders of the bishop and placed it on his own shoulders and was walking along in the march. And for that action, the communist colonel was imprisoned, and he was never heard from again. Well, Bishop Ford died on that death march in February of 1952. A Chinese cook, whom he felt was very loyal to him, was the one who had actually betrayed him. And after Bishop Ford died, the Chinese cook returned to Bishop Ford's house, went up to the chapel, threw a rope over a rafter in the chapel, and hung himself. It was Sister Joan Marie who finally was able to get in touch with officials at Mary Noel to inform them that Bishop Ford had indeed died. Biographies were written about Bishop Ford: Stone in the King's Highway, The Pagoda and the Cross. Bishop Ford High School was built in his honor in Brooklyn, New York, and Bishop Fulton J. Sheen even actively talked about opening up a cause to study his possible beatification. A lot of it might have been just much fuss to Francis Ford. "I can see God's hand in overlooking all my baseness and placing me where I have to imitate those above me to please him. I will go to the altar of God, I can truly say, to God who giveth joy to my youth. My life ought to be one of prayer, of praise and joy, and thanks for God's mercies." That was Francis Ford. James E. Walsh was in many ways to have a very different career than Bishop Ford. He would live 66 years as a priest, 54 years as a bishop. He is remembered certainly as the bishop who spent 12 years in a communist prison, but perhaps he was best known to his fellow Maryknollers as the bishop who never uttered an unkind word about his captors. I have no bitterness toward those who tried and condemned me. I could just never feel angry with any Chinese. I felt that way almost from the first day I set foot in China in 1918, and it has grown stronger with the years. Even during my imprisonment, I love the Chinese people. As we told you, he came from Cumberland, Maryland. He was the son of immigrant parents who had come from Parkersburg, West Virginia, and then settled in Maryland. And young James E. Walsh went to Mount St. Mary's in Emmitsburg, got a job as a timekeeper in a steel mill for a while after he finished college, and then as soon as he heard of the Catholic Foreign Mission Society, he knew that was the life for him, and he joined Mary Knoll, and he became one of those early missionaries to China, where he acquired the name Hua Li Son, which means pillar of truth. The task of any missionary, Father Walsh would say, is to go to a place where he is not wanted but needed, and to remain until he is not needed but wanted. His career would certainly prove that true. A missionary is, he writes, to go to a place to sell a pearl whose value, although of great price, is not recognized to people who are determined not to accept it, even as a gift. Now, more specifically related to China, this is what Bishop Walsh wrote. A missionary must absorb a new and fascinating civilization while eschewing its philosophy. He must adopt new viewpoints while retaining old ones. He must learn and wield a new language while clothing in it not its own shop-worn tags, but his own vigorous foreign thoughts. He must absorb not only the language itself, but what lies behind the language, the mentality that made it and is at once expressed and revealed and even times disguised by it. He must know and adopt many customs that are quite strange to him. He finds himself obliged to maintain through life a flexibility of both mind and body that makes of him a perpetual gymnast. Well, Bishop James E. Walsh was, of course, also made a bishop. He was named by Pope Pius XI as the first bishop of the Vicariate of Kong Moon. He was consecrated, by the way, on Sanxian Island, which was the death place of St. Francis Xavier many centuries before, and he would remain in his diocese until 1936, when he returned to Maryknoll following the death of Bishop James A. Walsh. Bishop James E. Walsh became the second Superior General of the Maryknoll Fathers, and from 1936 until 1948, he directed the entire operation of Maryknoll from Ossining, New York. Then, on the request of the Vatican, he returned to China in 1948. Bishop Fulton Sheen recalled this in his memoirs. I flew into Peking, China in 1948 with Bishop James E. Walsh of Maryknoll. Seated alongside him, I was reading Confucius, which prompted this remark. I believe you and I are the only two missionaries in China who have read Confucius. We have to know the Chinese way of thinking. Before you can lead people to where you want them to be, you have to know where they are. As we landed, he said, I will never leave China unless I am put out. Well, when the communists came to power in China in 1949, all foreign clergy were harassed. Bishop Walsh's office was officially closed, and his own safety and security was very, very much in the minds of his superiors at Maryknoll, and they strongly encouraged him to come home, but to absolutely no avail. He simply would not come home. In fact, not only would he not come home, but he wrote an article that appeared in 1951 in the publication of Maryknoll, The China Missionary. Seven reasons for Maryknollers and for all missionaries in general to remain at their posts. And these were Bishop Walsh's seven reasons. The wishes of the Church, the desire of the Holy Father, canonical responsibility, the people he or she was sent to serve, China in general, their missionary vocation, and the activity peculiar to their state in life. Now, Bishop Walsh took each one of these seven points, and he developed them in a very, very spiritual kind of way. For 7 years, he was left alone. The Chinese authorities wanted to show the world how liberal they were. They were not going to interfere with religion or religious leaders. In 1958, armed soldiers arrested the bishop, and for the next 2 years, they subjected him to incredible torture. As a biographer notes, he was subjected to constant questioning any hour of the night for short or longer periods, and always underwent the agonizing, endless repetition of the same questions. He was 67 at the time of his arrest. He had the courage to stand up to the questions, but after many months, his stamina was at a low ebb. He had been sleeping on the prison's cement floors through all kinds of weather. When he took ill, he was covered with boils that could not be treated in the primitive conditions under which he lived. It was almost a stroke of mercy that he was sentenced to 20 years, because then he was removed from this part of the prison and assigned to the hospital ward where his health was less threatened. For another 10 years, what could he look forward to? Much to his amazement, at one point they actually allowed him to read some of the great classics of English literature, but these were very quickly taken away from him, and the only reading material that was provided to him was communist propaganda. He'd get up every morning, and in the next room there would be a glaring radio, and the radio would be blasting this communist propaganda at him constantly, day in and day out. Two things essentially kept Bishop Walsh sane throughout his years of incarceration. One was his rosary. He called the rosary his lifeline. He said it over and over and over, the constant repetition of the rosary. And the second was a Chinese-English dictionary which his captors had left with him. He said he would sit there in the cell for hours studying the intricate characters of the Chinese language and learning more and more about Chinese, and these were the two things that kept him sane: the Chinese-English dictionary and the continuous repetition of the rosary. During the many years that he served in prison, he was not allowed visitors except on one occasion. In the summer of 1960, his brother, William E. Walsh, who was the state attorney general in the state of Maryland, was allowed a series of visits to his brother over a few days. Otherwise, he had no contact with the outside world at all. Speaking and reflecting on this some years later to a group of sisters in Wilmington, Delaware, Bishop Walsh said this: "I don't mind telling you that during my 12 years in prison, I was not unhappy a single day. I dreamed, well, first of all, I woke up in the morning and found myself in prison. I had been taken the night before, handcuffed, surrounded by six guards. When I woke up the next morning, I thought, this is what I've dreamed of, time to say all the prayers I could not say while I was working. I had time to pray for my family, for my friends, for people all over the world, everybody under the sun. And I knew you were praying for me during these years. God has put us here on earth to help each other, and the best way to help people is to pray for them. Prayer is so powerful. I am a living example of what prayer can do." On July 8, 1970, Bishop Walsh was told without warning one day to get ready immediately. He was being exiled from the mainland. They said, "There's a train going to Canton and you are to be on it." He was on the train, and eventually he made his way to Hong Kong. News began to filter through Hong Kong that he was indeed being released from prison. He got into the Mary Knoll Sisters Hospital there, where he underwent emergency medical treatment, and then he was on his way to rehabilitation. Pope Paul VI welcomed him in Rome. "You have been a witness, authentic and simple, in joy and in sorrow, then in suffering and in humiliation, and finally in separation from the people you loved so much. For all of this, we thank you on behalf of the entire Church of Christ." How then describe this great defender of faith? Perhaps one of his biographers, Mary Knoll Father Robert Sheridan, did it best. "The secret of James E. Walsh, I feel, is not so much any particular combination of things he did, but rather it is what he allowed God to do to him. What he allowed God to do to him and through him." Is this not the science of saints? So there we have the stories of Bishop Francis X. Ford and Bishop James E. Walsh, The Dry Martyrs of Mary Knoll. A young boy from Brooklyn, New York, a young boy from Cumberland, Ohio. One would die young, one would live old. Very different lives, but much the same. Defenders of the faith in their deed of dry martyrdom. And the church has been so blessed by the witness of their lives.